Let's head over to Austin and State Representative District 12, Kyle Cassell. Joins us. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. Good morning. How you doing today?
Well, you know, it's going to be 85 degrees in February, so that can't be too bad, can it?
No, I think I saw on Twitter our old weatherman, Travis Herzog, down in Houston, saying it might hit 100 down in the valley. And I'm like, wait, it's February 22nd.
That's going to mess up all sorts of nature. Just in time for our Easter freeze, right?
Just in time for the Easter freeze, and oranges will be ready before Easter gets here.
Yeah, so. All right, well, tell me what's been going on since you and I spoke last legislatively.
Well, we got committees we talked about last week,
right.
And the wheels are turning. We're moving. We've got some bills that will be ready to come to the floor at the beginning of March when we hit day 60. So the machine's going. You know, Senate got out there, was working every day, and now all of a sudden they started taking off. I go over there, and I can't hardly find one of those guys.
Really? Really? Well, I guess that's the reason that the senator wants to talk to us early in the week. So
that's
going
right.
To committee hearings
or whatever.
Once they get
rolling, and we get to work the five-day weeks now.
There you are. So tell me about legislation that you've sponsored or co-sponsored that's out there.
All right. I'm going to start with two pieces that are kind of closely related. We've got HB 1256, which has the tagline, "Blessed are the peacemakers, specialty plates." So these will be a specialty plate you can get through the DPS or the Department of Motor Vehicles. And that fund will help go to fund the additional names of officers fallen in line of duty on that monument here on the Capitol grounds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, good.
And to follow up that, we'll go with HB 2119, which is First Responder Spousal Death Benefit. So we made it possible last session clear that remarrying does not eliminate that spousal death benefit for the spouses and their children, which I think is important. So we'll continue to ensure that that is standard practice.
You know, let's talk today. In speaking with the senator earlier this week, he has joined a group of legislators who have said that they really, in the current form, they are not in favor of any high-speed rail going through their areas simply because it's a tremendously expensive venture. There's no doubt about that. And the payoff numbers don't seem to balance right now. Now, you take that and then you add it to, of course, your very agrarian district, and there has to be some heartburn over the possibility of that high-speed rail as well. Can you tell me, did you join that group, or what are we hearing on the bullet train now?
Yeah, I believe I joined that group earlier in the interim on a letter signed, representing Limestone County. It will go through the northeast part of that county, one of the routes. And I think you and I have joked about this. I think everybody in Limestone County has sent my office a letter in opposition. And we had a group of young people visiting the capital from Limestone County yesterday, and that was their top concern. You know, when kids from eighth grade to seniors in high school are talking about high-speed rail and how it's going to affect their livelihood and the farms and ranches that they live on in their community, it's a top priority. Of course, all that legislation dropped this week, and it's been in the news. I've been blessed with some clients from California the last couple of weeks coming into the ranch and to enjoy the Brazos Valley. And many times we get the discussion on their high-speed rail train that is over budget. They can't afford it. They can't finish it. They're having issues getting through country. And you can see all the dilemmas. I mean, not only do we have examples in Japan that don't work, we have an example right here in the United States and California where it started as a private group and now the government does not want to take the burden on to finish that rail as it's over budget by millions and millions of dollars.
Well, and again, it just as you run the numbers out, it's going to take a long, long time for that to happen. But that's part of as new people with different ideas come into Texas. All week long, actually, last couple of weeks, I think the Texas Tribune has had some of their polling information out there. Number one thing that they found among pollsters was, give us some tax breaks as far as property taxes are concerned. That seems to be the message they're sending to Austin, but I know that I'm not sure if they understand the equation properly, but that's going to cause some ramifications on the local and county level if y'all do that.
It does. It sounds good, and it's a great tagline. When we talk to our constituents about property taxes and saving us some money, We've done a few cuts. You look at where our counties are. My counties are struggling. The big bulk of that, everybody gets the property tax and the school tax confused. And we've got to have dollars. The budget's tight in Austin. We've got to be careful. I think we're in a good place. Our economy's in a good place. We need to hold steady. And, of course, that will the bulk of the debate as our Appropriations Committee are meeting every day and listen to them talk about the numbers, that gap between $5 billion and $8 billion and the difference between the two budgets in the House and Senate. We're going to do what we can to help our constituents. It's just going to be tough this session, and we're planning out 2 years, and we need, like everybody else, we're ready for oil to come back and come back with a vengeance.
Sure. And of course, where are we from a week ago with talk about the rainy day fund? Because I know that again, that's an issue that you want to be able to solve things, and that's, yeah, it's going to be $12 billion. There's going to be some serious money there. And what's your sense? Is there any shift? Well, is the needle moving at all?
Correct. Yeah, I think so. And I'll put it this way. To your point, $12 billion, we all agreed, both bodies, that a $7.5 billion cap or floor would be the right amount. So we've got some money to play with there. And I think when appropriations and Senate finance start looking at all things we have to fund, I think it's going to be more, the only word I can come up with, palatable for all legislators to say it's time to look seriously at the Economic Stabilization Fund and utilize that to fill some of these holes that we have to fund this year, including CPS, public education, and, you know, the big chunk that health care will continue to take out of our budget.
Well, I don't know if you read the stories from other states, but I'm watching other states that are just struggling because they have a deficit and they don't have an Economic Stabilization Fund. So, again, always good to have savings there if you do need them.
Let me tell you what, we can complain about getting in this legislature and things that didn't happen right before we got here, but our forefathers that put that Economic Stabilization Fund, God bless them.
Yep, that's for sure. Hey, thanks for the time this morning. We'll visit with you next Thursday.
Scott, look forward to it. Have a great day.
All right, thank you. You too.